Welcome to Torah Mechanach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Lynn Kraft, and today we will be learning Melachim Bet, Perachav Bet, Chapter 22. In the last parak, Perachav Aleph, Chapter 21, we learned primarily of Menashe's 55-year-long reign, during which the Chorban, the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, was decreed due to his unprecedented evil and spread of the worship of Avodah Zarah throughout Malchut Yehuda. He was then succeeded by his evil son Amon, who was assassinated by his own servants after only 2 years on the throne, leading the people to hastily appoint his young son Yoshiyahu as king in order to reassure Ashur that Amon's assassination did not signify a rebellion against them. In Pesach Aleph, verse 1, we're told that Yoshiyahu became king at just 8 years old because of his father's untimely death. And since he began his reign as a child king, he was likely unable to rule by himself and was therefore undoubtedly guided by the adults of the political echelon surrounding him in the palace, such as his father's and his grandfather's officers, etc. And so it's very surprising then that in Pesach Bet, verse 2, Yoshiyahu's religious stature is described in extremely admirable terms, more praiseworthy even than some of his very righteous predecessors in Malchut Yehuda. Ve'yaseh yashar b'nei Hashem, and he did what was straight in the eyes of Hashem, ve'yilach b'chol derech David aviv, and he walked in the entire path of David his father, ve'lo sarya minu smol, and he did not stray left or right, or right or left. But how on earth did Yoshiyahu become such a righteous king if he was likely raised and guided by the very people who had the same shared values of his father Amon and his grandfather Menashe? It's interesting because Sefer Melachim does not provide an answer for us. In fact, Pasuk Gimel, verse 3, the next Pasuk, launches us into the 18th year of Yoshiyahu's reign, by which time it's clear that Yoshiyahu is already a virtuous leader. But how did that happen? In other words, what happened during the first 17 years of Yoshiyahu's reign that led him to develop spiritually in such an impressive way? While we're not told this in Sefer Melachim, we are given a glimpse into Yoshiyahu's spiritual development in Sefer Devar HaYamim Bet, Perek Lamed Aleph, Pasuk Gimel, chapter 34, verse 3. Where we're informed that Yoshiyahu discovered Hashem during the 8th year of his reign when he was 16 years old. U'bishmona shanim l'malcho, and at the 8th year of his reign, v'hu odenu na'ar, and he was still a youth, hichel lidrosh l'elokei David aviv, he began to seek out the God of David his father. This implies that until then, he likely worshipped Avodah Zarah, just like his father Amon and grandfather Menashe, because he was a child king, and that's how he was raised by his parents and his grandparents, and by the officers in the palace who had been appointed by his evil father and his wicked grandfather. But something changed when he turned 16. Perhaps since he was an adolescent, and so he was beginning to explore his own identity as separate from his parents and those of everyone around him. And it seems like in the midst of that process, he somehow stumbled upon the idea of Hashem. It appears that Yoshiyahu took his rediscovery of God seriously and wanted to make sure he really believes in Hashem before acting upon that belief. And so he spent the next 4 years seeking, reflecting, and contemplating Hashem until when he turned 20, uvishtei mesrei shana, and in the 12th year, heichel litaharet Yudah v'Yerushalayim, he began to purify Judah and Jerusalem, min habamot v'ha'ashirim v'ha'psilim v'ha'masichot, from the high platforms, from the ashirim, from the statues and the images. And as we're told in the following psukim, in Devar HaYamim Bet, Perek Lamed Aleph, Psukim Dalet through Zion, chapters 34, verses 4 through 7, Yoshiyahu continued to destroy all the idols and altars of Avodah Zarah throughout all of Malchut Yehuda, and even in the land of the former Malchut Yisrael as well, throwing their sawdust upon the graves of those who served them, and burning the bones of the Kohanim, the priests, upon their idolatrous altars. This was actually in direct fulfillment of the Nevuah, the prophecy of the Isha Elohim, the man of God, who was the Navi, the prophet, who went to Betel to rebuke Yerovam ben Nevat when he created the shrines to Hashem outside the Beit HaMikdash in Betel and Dan, warning him in Melachim Aleph Perek Yud Gimel, Pasuk Bet, chapter 13, verse 2, by addressing the Mizbeach, the altar itself, that Yerovam ben Nevat had built in Betel. And it says, Vayikra alam mizbeach b'dvar Hashem, and he called upon the altar with the word of Hashem, Vayomer mizbeach mizbeach, and he said, altar, altar, ko amar Hashem, so said Hashem, Hinei ven nolad levit David, behold, a son will be born to the house of David, Yoshiyahu shemo, Yoshiyahu is his name, v'zavach alacha et kohanei habamor hamikatrim hamaktirim alacha, and he will sacrifice upon you the priests of the platforms who burn incense upon you, v'atzmot adam yisrafu alacha, and they will burn human bones upon you. And this very descendant of Yerovam ben Nevat's rival dynasty of Malchut Yehuda, Yoshiyahu, who is the subject of this Isha Elohim's prophecy centuries earlier, has now become king and begun to fulfill this prophecy in all of its exact details. Now that we have a better understanding of Yoshiyahu's spiritual development from an Avodah Zarah worshipping child king to a God-seeking adolescent and adult king who acted on Hashem's behalf by destroying all remnants of Avodah Zarah throughout actually both kingdoms, we can better appreciate the events of the 18th year of his reign, which are described here in our parak and Sefer Melachim. In Psukim Gimel through Zion, verses 3 through 7, Yoshio decided to renovate the Beit HaMikdash. He commanded his officer, Shafan HaSofer, the scribe, to go to the Beit HaMikdash and tell Chilkiyahu, the Kohen Gadol, to count the money collected by the doorkeepers from the people coming to the Beit HaMikdash and to give it as payment to the workmen who were in charge of repairing anything that breaks in the Beit HaMikdash, including the carpenters, the builders, the masons, and to use it as well for the purchase of timber and hewn stone. They did not need, we're told, to follow up with these employees about the money paid to them, ki be'emunah himosim, because they dealt faithfully. And this entire episode reminds us, both in content and in word choice, of Yoshiyahu's ancestor Yoash, a king we learned about back in Prakim Yod Aleph Yebet, chapters 11 through 12, who also engaged in renovating the Beit HaMikdash. And there are so many particular phrases that are seen in both narratives. For instance, HaKesef HaMuval Beit Hashem, the money that was brought to the house of God, Shomrei Hasaf, the doorkeepers, Vinatnu or Vayitnuhu, Al Yadei Osei, Al Yad Osei HaMelacha HaMufkadim Beit Hashem, and they gave it to the workmen who oversaw the house of God. L'chazek bedek habayit, to repair the broken parts of the Beit HaMikdash. L'charashim v'labonim v'lagudrim v'laknot itzim v'avnei machtziv, to the carpenters, the builders, the masons, and to purchase wood and hewn stone. And lo yichashev itam, or v'lo yichashvu et anashim. And then that's followed by asher yinu et hakesef al yadam, or hakesef hanitan al yadan. And then it's followed in both by ki bamunahim osim, as we just mentioned. And they weren't concerned with the people to whom they gave the money in their hands because they acted faithfully. And it's interesting because there are several other similarities between Yoshiyahu and Yoash as well. Perhaps most strikingly, they have similar names with similar spellings, right? Yoash, Yoshiyahu. Also, they each became king as a young child. Yoash, if you remember, at 7 years old, and Yoshiyahu at 8 years old. In Sefer Melachim's recounting of their reigns, the first royal project they each engaged in, at least according to this Sefer, was to renovate the Beit HaMikdash. And finally, they both rebelled in their adolescence against the ways that they had been raised as children. Yoash, unfortunately, against Hashem, and Yoshiyahu against Avodah Zarah. Perhaps that's why Yoshiyahu has Hashem's name appended as a suffix to the end of his name, whereas Yoash's name is missing that very suffix. Perhaps it's because Yoash ultimately chose not to include Hashem in his adult life, whereas Yoshiyahu actively sought to include Hashem in his life as he grew older. Now, in Pasuk Chet, verse 8, Chilkiyahu the Kohen Gadol told Shafan HaSofer, Sefer HaTorah Matzati Bevet Hashem, the book of the Torah, or the scroll of the Torah, I have found in the house of God. Chilkiyahu Kohen Gadol then gave it to Shafan HaSofer, who read it. And in Pesukim Tet through Yud, verses 9 through 10, Shafan went before the king to give him an update on the success of the Beit HaMikdash renovation project, and then told him about the Sefer Torah that Chilkiyahu Kohen Gadol had found. In Pesukim Yud Aleph through Yud Gimel, verses 11 through 13, we're told that as soon as Yoshiyahu heard the contents of the Sefer Torah, he immediately tore his clothing and sent his officials to seek out Hashem on behalf of himself and the entire nation of Machal Yehuda, because the content of the Sefer Torah indicated that Hashem's wrath upon them was very great for their fathers not having listened to the contents of this book and not having acted according to its dictates. In Pasuk Yadalad, Yoshio's officers responded to his request by seeking out Chulda HaNevi'ah, the prophetess, who was described as V'hi Yoshevet B'Yerushalayim, and she was sitting in Jerusalem. And this was an interesting choice of prophet, since we know from Sefer Yirmiyahu in Perek Aleph Pasuk Bet, in chapter 1, verse 2, that Yirmiyahu had already been prophesying for Bnei Yisrael and Yoshiyahu for 5 years at this point, as he was sanctified as a Navi during the 13th year of Yoshiyahu's reign, and this narrative took place during the 18th year of his reign. So why did Yoshiyahu's officers elect to consult with Chuldah instead of with Yirmiyahu in this particular situation? So Rashi suggests two possible answers. His first answer is based on the Gemara and Megillah Daf Yudalad Amud Bet, that the officers specifically sought out a woman and not Yirmiyahu, who was a man, because women have more rachamim, they have more compassion than men do. It seems that the content of the Sefer Torah that they discovered was so distressing that they felt that they needed rachamim, they needed compassion at this time. But haven't we learned that we can't choose our Nevi'im, our prophets, based on what we want to hear? That true Nevu'ah or prophecy will express the same truth from Hashem no matter who delivers it? Wasn't that exactly the mistake of Yeravam ben Nevat when he invited the Isha Elohim, who had just rebuked him in Perek Yud Gimel, chapter 13, to come back to his palace to eat with him in the hope that he could bribe him into giving him a more positive Nevu'ah, prophecy? Or the mistake of Ahav, who refused to ask a Navi Emet, a true prophet, whether to go to war because he claimed that the true Navi, the true prophet, didn't like him, so he consulted with Nevi'e Sheker, false prophets instead, who fed him false information since that's what they knew he wanted to hear? And wasn't this also the mistake of Ahav's son, Ahaziahu, who mistakenly believed that if he could just kill Eliyahu, Eliyahu's negative nevuah prophecy about his intending death from his illness could be reversed. Shouldn't Yoshiyahu, as righteous a king as he was, and his officers have known better? So in light of these arguments, many understand this approach of Rashi is to mean that it could not have been that they were expecting the content of the nevuah from Hashem to be any different from a woman than it would have been from a man. But rather, something else that the nevuah had to offer must have been different due to her gender. Either, as the Gemara in Sanhedrin Pei Tet Amar Aleph says, De Amar Rabbi Yitzhak, Rabbi Yitzhak, as Rabbi Yitzhak says, Signon Echad Ola L'Kama Nevi'im, several prophets may have one vision of the same subject matter, Ve'ein Shnei Nevi'im Inab'in B'Signon Echad, but two prophets don't prophesy with the same style. In other words, while different Nevi'im may receive the same vision of Nevuah or prophecy from Hashem, each Navi, each prophet really has his own style of expression, and therefore no two Nevi'im will ever give over the same vision in the same exact way. And basically, this Gemara teaches us that a Navi's personality can really influence the delivery of the Nevuah of the prophecy. So perhaps because of Yirmiyahu's tendency towards harshness, Yoshiyahu wanted to find a female Nevi'ah whose approach and style would be softer and more merciful than a man's, so that it would be easier for them to hear and digest the Nevuah, the prophecy itself. Or, as the Maharsha explains, V'chi mishum derech maniyot hein, can it be that since women are more merciful, tishaneh nevuata mira'a l'tova, her prophecy would change from bad to good? V'im haya yarei sheyirmiya yitnabei lo l'ra'a, and if he was afraid that Yirmiyahu would prophesy for him evil, gam hiva daito markein, then she, meaning Hulda, would certainly do the same. Ella, deish lo mar derech maniyot hein, rather, there is to say that women are merciful, utivakesh aleim rachamim l'shanot mira'a l'tova, and she would request compassion for them to change the decree from evil to good. And so according to the Maharsha, of course the content of the Nevuah wouldn't change merely because of the Navi's gender. But perhaps Chulda's reaction would be different than Yirmiyahu's reaction due to their differences in gender. And in her compassion, she would respond by immediately davening to Hashem on their behalf, which, as we learn from Chizkiyahu's tefillah in response to hearing that he would die from his illness, can really work to reverse an evil decree. And so that is all about Rashi's first answer, that perhaps they chose to consult with Chulda, the Nevi'ah, as a woman because she was more compassionate. Whether that was because her style would be more compassionate in terms of her delivery, or whether that was because she would therefore daven on their behalf, which they were, in need of. Rashi's second answer, as to why Yoshiyahu's officers consulted with Chulda instead of with Yirmiyahu, is also based on the same Gemara in Megillah Daf Yod Dalet Amud Bet, and is more practical-minded, explaining that Yirmiyahu just wasn't in Yerushalayim at the time, because he had gone up north to bring back the remnants of the Aseret HaShvatim, the 10 tribes who had been exiled to Ashur. We do, in fact, know from Rashi's interpretation of Yirmiyahu Perek Gimel that Yirmiyahu had, in fact, departed on such a mission during Yoshiyahu's reign. Radak offers a similarly practical answer, explaining that Yirmiyahu was not in Yerushalayim at the time, but for a different reason. And that was because he simply lived in Anatot, which was a suburb of Yerushalayim, in the Nachla, in the portion of Shevet Binyamin, and therefore it was a journey several hours away from Yerushalayim itself. But Chulda was already in Yerushalayim, and since Yoshiyahu was so distraught, his officers understood that his mission was urgent, and so instead of waiting several hours to travel to Yirmiyahu in Anatot, they consulted with Chulda since she was local, and would therefore be able to answer them much sooner. Both of these practical explanations explain this seemingly random description of Chulda in the Pasuk that specifically explains V'hi Yoshevet B'Yerushalayim, and she was sitting in Yerushalayim. Perhaps her location was stressed here because it helps explain why she was sought instead of Yirmiyahu. And finally, Rabbi Binyamin Lau suggests that Yoshiyahu's officers chose to approach Chulda because at this time she was already a veteran Navi, or Nevi'ah, whereas Yirmiyahu was still young, having only begun prophesying 5 years before. And we know that when he started to receive Nevuah, he was still very young, even at the time, because he complained to Hashem that he shouldn't be a Navi due to his youth. So they considered him young and they wanted a more veteran Navi or Nevi'ah because they considered this a very important matter. In Psukim Tevav through Chav, verses 15 through 20, Chulda told the officers to tell Yoshiyahu that because Bnei Yisrael had abandoned Hashem and worshipped Avodah Zarah in order to anger him, Hashem's wrath would result in his bringing upon them all the evil promise in the Sefer HaTorah. However, because Yoshiyahu was devoted to Hashem and because he reacted with such upset, both tearing his clothing and crying, when he heard what would happen to Yerushalayim and its inhabitants, this wouldn't happen until after he died in peace so that he wouldn't have to suffer by witnessing it himself. So the officers returned to the king and told him what Chulda had said. Now that we've learned everything about the Sefer HaTorah and the consequences of its being found and read before Yoshiyahu, and we also learned what Huldah prophesied in response, we're equipped to answer some very important questions about the entire episode. What was the nature of the Sefer Torah that they found? Why had it been hidden in the Beit HaMikdash only to be discovered upon its renovation? And why was the king so shocked and upset when its contents were read to him? And finally, how did Huldah's nevuah, her prophecy, connect to those contents? So what we're going to do is learn three different approaches to understanding what kind of Sefer Torah this was, which should help us answer, hopefully, all of our questions. According to the Barbanel, who brings together various Midrashei Chazal, the Sefer HaTorah referenced in this narrative was actually the original Sefer Torah written by Moshe himself at the end of his life, which was kept in the Beit HaMikdash. But when Menashe was king, he had sent his officers throughout the nation to confiscate all the Sefer Torah in the kingdom, erasing Hashem's name from each one and replacing it with the names of foreign deities. Because of this, one of the Kohanim, one of the priests in the Beit HaMikdash, hid the Sefer Torah that Moshe himself had written within the walls of the Beit HaMikdash in order to protect it from the clutches of Menashe and his officers so that they wouldn't find it and desecrate it. When Yoshiyahu became king and began to lead the Tshuva movement to convince Bnei Yisrael to follow the Torah again, the Kohanim and the priests actually searched for this personally written Sefer Torah of Moshe's, but they couldn't find it until they were making repairs to the Beit HaMikdash, which exposed the walls and led to Hilkiyahu's finding the scroll. And the Barbanel actually brings two textual proofs to support this identity of the Sefer Torah as such. Firstly, in Pasuk Chet, verse 8, when it was first discovered, it was described not just as a Sefer Torah, but as the Sefer HaTorah, with a Hei HaYediyah, which is a Hei that identifies a definite article. This proves that it wasn't just any Sefer Torah, but the Sefer Torah, meaning a unique one that was well known to Shafan HaSofer when Hilkiyahu announced its discovery to him. Furthermore, in Divrei HaYamim Bet, Perek Lamed Daled, Pasuk Yud Daled, chapter 34, verse 14, the Sefer Torah is referred to as, quote, Sefer Torah Hashem Biyad Moshe, the Sefer Torah of Hashem in the hand of Moshe, meaning, according to the Barbanel, that it was written by the hand of Moshe. The Barbanel goes on to explain that when they opened the scroll to read it to Yoshiyahu, they realized that instead of being rolled to the beginning as it should have been, it was rolled to the Tochacha, to the rebuke portion of the Torah instead, specifically to Devarim Perek Chavchet Pasuk Lamed Vav, chapter 28, verse 36, which speaks about Hashem's bringing the nation and its king into exile. And so this idea that the Torah scroll was rolled specifically to this Pasuk is actually supported by the text here in our Perek, in that this is exactly what Huldah prophesied would happen to them. The second approach is the Sforno's approach, that he writes in his commentary to Devarim Perek Lamed Aleph Pasuk Chaf Vav, chapter 31, verse 26, in which he claims that this Sefer Torah was actually the scroll from which the king used to read during Hakel, which is a national ceremony during which the entire nation of Bnei Yisrael gathered in the Beit HaMikdash to hear the Torah being read out loud by the king. And he claims that this scroll originally contained only the parshia about the appointment of a king from Devarim Perek Yud Zayin, chapter 17. And this scroll, with this parshia, with this section, was given by Moshe at the end of his life to the Kohanim, to the priests who carried the Aron, the Ark. And that later, Yehoshua added to the scroll the contents of the Brit, or the covenant, that he had forged between Bnei Yisrael and Hashem in Shechem, as we're told in Yehoshua Perek Chaf Daled, chapter 24, in which the people committed to worshiping only Hashem and not to worship Avodah Zarah anymore. And when Yehoshua read the contents of this Brit, of this covenant, and realized how much the nation had diverged from it, he was fearful, and he sought Hashem through a Neviyah, through a prophetess. And it actually makes sense that Yoshiyahu would not have been familiar with the text of this Brit, of this covenant forged by Yehoshua, because the Tanakh had not been canonized yet. So it's less likely that he would have even been exposed to Sefer Yehoshua. Also, as we'll learn in the next parak, in Parak Chaf Gimel, chapter 23, Yoshua's reaction to all this will be to re-enter Bnei Yisrael into a Brit, or a covenant with Hashem, just like Yehoshua did. Finally, according to the Radak, this Sefer Torah was just a regular Sefer Torah, a Torah scroll like the ones we still have today. But if it was just a standard Sefer Torah, why would it have led Yoshiyahu to become so distraught upon reading it? So the Radak explains that Menashe had ruled for 55 years before this, during which time he caused the entire nation of Bnei Yisrael to completely forget the Torah. They were all worshiping Avodah Zarah anyway, so they weren't really interested in what the Torah said. And that during the renovation, Hilkiyahu discovered the Sefer Torah where it always was, resting next to the Aron in the Kodesh HaKodeshim. And Yoshiyahu and his officers were shocked when they were read its contents, which were just regular Torah contents, because they were suddenly exposed to so many halachot that forbade all the horrible sins that Bnei Yisrael had been committing, about which they had unfortunately been completely ignorant until now. Now, you might ask, how could Bnei Yisrael have just forgotten about the Torah so quickly during one king's reign? Like, really? But if we actually add up Menashe's 55-year reign, to Amon's two-year reign, to Yoshiyahu's 18 years of rule until now, it had actually been 75 years since the people served Hashem correctly. And this is actually pretty comparable in length to the 74-year era during which Jews in the USSR were completely disconnected from their Judaism under the Russian communist regime and behind the Iron Curtain, which lasted from the time of the Bolshevik Revolution in 1917 until the dissolution of the Soviet Union in 1991. And unfortunately, we know that that was more than enough time for them to have become completely ignorant of Torah and Mitzvot. So it does seem that this was pretty realistic, that it just happened, that they forgot the actual Torah. To conclude, the Malbim in Pasuk Chet in verse 8 understands Shafan's reading the Sefer Torah to the king here as his way of rebuking the king for focusing too much on the externals, on what the Beit HaMikdash looked like on the outside, but not enough on the internals, on the inside of the Beit HaMikdash where Hashem resides, which is where this Sefer Torah was actually hiding, and on what that Torah actually says the people should do. In other words, by reading the Sefer Torah to the king, Shafan was sending him an implicit message. Stop fixing only what the Beit HaMikdash looks like on the outside, and start fixing what the people are actually doing wrong according to this Sefer Torah that was just discovered. Because that's an even more important component of the tshuva process that Yoshiyahu had started. Unfortunately, Yoshiyahu's focusing too much on the externals and not enough on the internals will become very relevant in the next parak, Parak Chaf Gimel, chapter 23. This year is dedicated by Michelle Levine and Susan Schuster and their families in memory of their beloved mother, grandmother, and great-grandmother, Rebbetzin Gloria Leff Golda Tzivia Bat Baruch. Rebbetzin Leff was a highly regarded principal and Torah teacher, a master educator, whose deep love for teaching Tanakh inspired hundreds of students throughout her lifetime.